Good afternoon, or good morning, or good evening, whenever you might be listening to this. I'm John Haverland with the Circuit Journal, and I'm joined by an old colleague of mine, Steven Cusimano. Steve is a former member of the Pit Notes team at Phoenix Raceway, which is where we both kind of got our foot into the NASCAR industry. So he's going to be joining me for select podcast episodes. And this first episode we have together, we're going to talk about the North Wilkesboro virtual race, the iRace that just took place. And we're going to talk about the overall effects that iRacing's had in the last 2 months to substitute the real racing with, you know, simulated ones. So, Steve, I just wanted to get your initial thoughts on what iRacing has meant to you in this time of coronavirus crisis.
It's been really awesome, to be honest. You know, I feel like NASCAR deserves a lot of credit for the way that they handled the entire pandemic. And, you know, obviously the circumstances aren't great, but, the way that they were able to be opportunistic in making this happen so quickly with, you know, engaging the audience and the fans and getting so many of the sports top stars and, you know, the broadcast teams involved with this was really awesome in basically every way. And, of course, to incorporate some ways that they can promote social distancing and other methods to prevent spreading the virus. And then, of course, even donating to COVID-19 relief efforts. I think they deserve a lot of credit for that. And it was really cool to see the drivers, you know, connected with the fans, even at a time like this, where a lot of other sports organizations don't really have that luxury.
Yeah, definitely. I think overall it's been a successful 2 months for NASCAR. Their esports have just completely broken records for previous esport broadcasts on TV. You're talking about 1 million people for each of these Pro Invitational Series races, and that's, you know, that's far exceeding what the NBA had. That's even exceeding what IndyCar had with their iRacing, where they had maybe 100,000 or 200,000 people watching their races. That doesn't mean there wasn't controversy with this. The biggest story that came out of this, probably unfortunately, really, is that Kyle Larson's no longer a NASCAR Cup driver. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that, and you know, even beyond that, putting Matt Kenseth in that 42 car, just talk to me about what you think of that.
Yeah, obviously, like you said, it was my first emotion was really just disappointed. I mean, the sport was making such great strides in terms of really just growing in general. You mentioned the you know, how well that the ratings were and the viewership was for these iRacing. You know, people wanted to watch their live sports, and a lot of them, with nothing else to turn to, did turn to NASCAR and to iRacing. And so it was, you know, we were starting to get away from the sort of reputation that was lingering on with the sport for a lot of years. And then, you know, of course, something like this happens that was really, really unfortunate. And obviously, you know, for anyone that's ever interacted with Kyle Larson, it just felt a little bit out of character. So it was disappointing to see the progress that the sport had made, you know, maybe reverting a little bit, but was definitely surprised to see Matt Kenseth filling that seat. You know, when he did retire a couple years ago, you know, you think about the way he went about it. He didn't necessarily shut the door on a return. So in that sense, it was not surprising. But I think, you know, you look at a couple of other prospective drivers who could have filled that seat, guys like Ross Chastain, I think are what a lot of people were expecting. But, you know, so it's surprising in that sense. But really excited to see what Matt Kenseth can do in that Hendrick motor for Chip Ganassi. And I love the fit. I love that NASCAR granted him the playoff waiver. And, you know, at least something in that context is good that came out of that. But I do really hope that Kyle Larson can find, you know, the counseling he needs and that sort of thing. And I do wish him nothing but the best going forward.
Yeah, so one thing you mentioned when you first started talking about Larson is how it was kind of really a kick in the teeth to NASCAR. Mm-hmm. NASCAR has really, really tried to shed this, I guess, I don't know how to describe it, this belief that it's a racist Southern sport. It's put a lot of effort into discouraging people from bringing Confederate flags to the races. You know, you go to Darlington Raceway or Talladega, you're going to see Confederate flags, and you can go around and count each one of them as you walk around the track, and whatever number that is, that's the amount that NASCAR would like to see torn up into pieces. Mm-hmm. As for Kenseth, that was a pretty surprising move. I think a lot of people thought Chastain was the obvious, you know, favorite. I was listening to Corey LaJoie's podcast, and he mentioned that Daniel Hemric and AJ Allmendinger's name were also in the running for that. But Kenseth, yeah, that's probably the best choice. He's the guy that's a former champion. He's not going to really tear up your cars. You know he's going to be consistent. I mean, hell, he won a championship simply by being consistent.
Right.
And he's paired with Kurt Busch. The two of them worked together when they were teammates at Roush Fenway, which was also a time when they were both champions. Matt having won the 2003 championship and Kurt winning the 2004. So how do you think they'll gel together at Chip Ganassi Racing?
I mean, yeah, you hit it right on the head. It's a great fit. Drivers who kind of grew up in the sport at similar times and had their success at very similar times. And, you know, I think they come from similar backgrounds in that context as well. So I definitely think that there's only good things that can come out of that. And I'm excited to see, you know, what it's like the first time that he jumps back into the car, which I can't believe is coming up real soon.
Who would you say impressed you the most during the Pro Invitational Series?
You know, it's definitely easy to say, you know, a couple of the guys who were running up front the whole time, like Timmy Hill, who was probably the most consistent of all the iRacing drivers. But if I had to pick one, I think William Byron really impressed me. Just, you know, obviously he's very experienced in iRacing, I should say. So something he came into with a lot of experience, and that's ultimately why he had so much success doing it and led the Invitational Series with those three wins. But I really was impressed with the immaturity of William Byron, a guy who's, you know, in his early 20s, 22, 23 years old, had some tough run-ins on the track with, namely, Timmy Hill. I think it was the second, or maybe the first or second race, where he was taken out, had the dominant car those first couple of weeks. And I know that's kind of a bizarre answer, but I was, you know, sometimes it's easy to get worked up when you're playing video games and that sort of thing. So I was impressed with the way that he handled himself the first couple of weeks and onward, and the way he was able to overcome that adversity. And obviously his performance on the track spoke for itself. So I was, you know, for someone as young as himself, you know, we've seen it plenty of times how, you know, you can get very hot-headed when something like that happens, when you're a little bit disappointed after not winning the race when you had one of the better cars. But I think all things considered, I was really impressed with what William Byron brought to the table throughout these past 7 weeks.
I think I would say I was most impressed with Timmy Hill, because I simply just didn't realize how good he was at iRacing. Garrett Smithley as well. I didn't. Mm-hmm. That first Homestead race, then I see the 66 car and the 51 car up front. I'm like, I was not ready for that. I was expecting like Dale Jr. and Landon Castle and Parker Kligerman, because I know that they've been iRacing. And I knew that Hill and Smithley did it too. I guess I completely underestimated how good they would be. And, you know, Byron as well, obviously he was super impressive. He won like 3 out of 4 races in a month or so. So let's move on to Darlington. There will be no fans in the grandstands. There will be a select amount of media members that can cover. I've been having a few conversations with people, and it sounds like there's going to be 4 writers there, one from the AP, and one from, so that's Jenna Fryer, one that's local, so that could be someone from North Carolina, South Carolina, and then there will be 2 other people chosen by the National Press Association. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on running these races without fans and why this works.
I definitely think that NASCAR is going about it the right way. Obviously, you know, surface level, a lot of people who don't know the sport very well might think, you know, it's easy for NASCAR to return. They're just in their cars. But you think about, you know, the several thousand people that go into a race weekend between all the team members and the league officials and every, you know, all the work that goes into it. I really think they're going about it the right way with not promoting or condoning any sort of big, large gatherings, you know, amongst fans, and also you know, in stating some COVID-19, I believe it was called sanitation guidelines, that, you know, or you can get a pretty hefty penalty if you don't follow those guidelines. So I think they're going about it in a very safe way. I think that they're going about it at a good time. I think. You know, you think about what else is going on in the country and the way things are sort of transpiring with this virus. I think they're, you know, they're doing it at a pretty good time. And I do like the way that they are doing it at a couple tracks that are very central to the NASCAR community and a lot of the shops out there in the Carolinas. So, I think if they're doing a good job with that. And as far as how it works with TV, it's two of the sport's most beloved and iconic tracks. So definitely a good thing that they're going to start restart the series down there in South Carolina at Darlington and North Carolina in Charlotte.
If you're listening and wondering why they chose to do two races at Darlington and two at Charlotte, basically NASCAR wants to keep the teams from having to use hotels and stay overnight at places, so that's why they wouldn't make trips, you know, that are more than a couple hours away. You think about all of the crew members, you want them to be able to make like a two-hour drive from Charlotte to Darlington and then return home the same night, just show up, run the race, and head back home. That's also going to be more cost-efficient for the teams who have not had any income. One of the biggest things that comes from this, the way NASCAR is doing this without any fans, the reason this works is because the tracks actually profit from the TV deal. NASCAR has the contracts with NBC Sports and Fox Sports, and a majority of the income for the tracks and for the race teams themselves comes from this TV deal. It's not having people in the grandstands, it's not from sponsorships, it's from the broadcasting standpoint. So that's why this deal works without fans. Ultimately, yeah, they're still going to be missing out on some dollars, obviously not having concession stands and bars open, all that sort of thing, but another important thing is there's only races, so that's another way to save money. You think about it, they're not going to be spending money to, you know, run practice sessions and burning up tires, burning up fuel. Mm-hmm. And they're also limiting the amount of crew members per team. So I just wanted to run that by for whoever's listening and wasn't exactly sure about why NASCAR's doing things the way they are. Steve, I wanted to ask you, would you like to try iRacing yourself one day if you haven't done so already?
Absolutely, yeah. If I had the resources, that is something that wanted to try even before this entire thing happened. And, you know, watching, all the drivers and even other figures in NASCAR, you know, going iRacing on even some tracks that haven't been, you know, haven't had races run on since I've been alive. You know, I think it would just be one of the coolest things ever. It's cool enough playing a video game or, you know, going go-karting and that sort of thing, but to actually do something as realistic a simulation as iRacing would be really cool.
Yeah, North Wilkesboro, you can see on the broadcast that Mike Joy and Jeff Gordon, they were really excited about it, and Larry McReynolds for that matter too. They're all really excited, but that's because they lived through NASCAR in the 90s, and they know what that track meant. For, you know, me and you, I'm not sure what year you were exactly born, but for me, I was born in 95. I was 1 year old when NASCAR last raced at North Wilkesboro, so I didn't really have that same nostalgic excitement. Maybe if it was someplace like Rockingham, which I can remember races from when I was younger, that would have done it to me. But after watching this iRacing event at North Wilkesboro, it was definitely exciting. Definitely had that old school short track feel, and that's precisely what NASCAR, I think, should be looking for with, just about anything for that matter.
Absolutely. I was, you know, like you said, you hit it right on the head with the age. You know, I was born in 1997, and I did not get into NASCAR until the late 2000s, 2008. So I'm someone who couldn't even really conceptualize what a race would have been like at North Wilkesboro, and they did really an excellent job with putting on that show, and I was impressed with the competition. And, that was really cool to see as someone who, you know, is very in tune and ambitious with the history of the sport. It was very cool to see that, and like you said, really cool to see all the enthusiasm around drivers who even raced on that track, like Jeff Gordon and Bobby Labonte. So I definitely agree that if there's any way that NASCAR can continue to revisit sort of tracks from the sport's past, I think that's something that would be really cool, whether it is virtual or in person.
All right, cool deal, Steve. Loving it. Where can people find you on social media? What's maybe your Twitter and your Instagram or Facebook?
Yep, so on pretty much every one of my social media profiles, it's just my first and last name. So Steven, Steven, _ Cusimano, Cusimano. Always tweeting and Instagramming about sports and namely NASCAR. loving it, and loving the work with the Circuit Journal as well, and everything you do, John.
All right, cool deal. We'll hear from you again soon, Steve. Thanks for coming on.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it. Thank you.
All right, and that was Steven Cusimano. Like I said, he's an old friend of mine from my days back in Arizona. He was a Jimmy Johnson fan when he first got into NASCAR. Now that he's on the reporting side, though, I would trust that he is no longer a fan of any drivers. So you'll be hearing again from Steve and I again soon, and we look forward to seeing the Darlington race, and we'll talk to you again later.